So we are holding on Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, about the middle of the Amud. We're actually in the middle of a, we're smack in the middle of a discussion, such a recap. We talked about yesterday that we started with the discussion. You have two people. One made a chazakah on trees that's on property, and the other made a chazakah on land. In other words, you sold the tree. The Rashbam explained that the original owner of the land and the trees sold the land to one person and the trees to another. Tosfos learns differently that chazakah over here can mean regular chazakah of 3 years. One of them claims a chazakah of 3 years on the trees, the other one on the land. We asked the question, does the one who owns the trees own any part of the land as well? We said there were two opinions on that. We said Rav Zvid says that no, the one has the trees and no land, the other one has land and no trees. And Rav Papa said that no, the one who has the trees is entitled to a certain amount of land to go with the trees. And then we brought up a point that we have a somewhat related machlokas later on in the Masechta between Rav Akiva and the Chachamim about the concept moicher ba'ayin yafa moicher or moicher ba'ayin ra moicher. When you're selling something, are you being generous with it? You're selling the maximum amount of what you could do. In other words, for example, you left yourself a certain, a bird or druth or whatever in the property. You didn't necessarily leave yourself a right of way to it. You have to buy a new one. The halacha is like a chacham. The chacham is like a chacham. We assume that he's only selling the minimum that he actually has to. Therefore, he will, if he reserved for himself the burr, he'll also automatically reserve for himself a land to reach that burr.
So that's the halacha.
That's the halacha. Okay. So then we discussed how that relates to this matter of the trees versus the land. So we were in the middle of that discussion. We said that actually we started by saying that if you sold the land but kept for yourself the trees, then there's no question you have karka. By reserving yourself the trees, you automatically meant to keep yourself karka as well in order for the trees to continue growing and for you to be able to eventually replant them, etc. Then we started saying if it's the other way around, if you sold the trees and kept the land for yourself, then that would be where this machlokas of Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanan would come into play. And that's we were in the middle of discussing that. We said that Rabbi Akiva does usually say mocha ba'ayin yafa mocha, and therefore he would say in this case, the one who bought the trees is entitled to a certain amount of the land. And the last thing we said in the Gemara is that would work both according to the Papa, who says that if you sold those trees and land to two different people, that the one who owns the trees is entitled to some of the land. It also works even according to the Zvid, because when you're selling to two different people, you can't say, well, I'm reserving some of the land in order to benefit the guy with the trees, because what's the logic? The one who owns the land has nothing in the trees. Why should the one who owns the trees have anything in the land? That's Rav Zvid Svara over there, to say that the one who owns the trees owns nothing in the land. But when it comes
to
you don't get land together with
land.
Yeah. But over here, since Rav Akiva says mocha ba'ayin yafa mocha, then he would say that fine. You sold the trees to one person. Rav Akiva was saying Rav Zvid could say that we could say in other words like this. This that we're saying that according to Rav Akiva, the one who bought the trees is entitled to land, that would work both according to Rav Papa and according to Rav Zvid. You don't have to say that Rav Zvid and Rav Papa are having the same machlokas as Rav Akiva and the Chachamim. You can say that Rav Zvid's opinion, we're going to see in a second how both opinions of the Amoraim work with both.
I understand, but Rav Zvid, how would it work?
Rav Zvid, because we're saying, Rav Zvid would say like this, if you're selling the trees to one person and the land to another one, then there's a logical reason to say, then there's a logical reason to say that just as he wasn't giving the one who bought the land anything in the trees, the same thing in reverse, you can assume the one he sold the trees to is not thereby entitled to anything in the land.
But
on the other hand, when you yourself are keeping the land for yourself and selling only the trees, sure, mocha v'ayin yafa mocha, you're gonna give him land along with the trees. It's different when you're selling all the land to somebody else. You can't say you're gonna be giving v'ayin yafa to one at the expense of the other. You're not gonna do that. But to give it at your own expense, that Rabbi Akiva would say you could do. Okay, so that's where we were holding then. We're holding just above the middle of the yom, lining in the back.
Means
we assume. Means if it wasn't otherwise specified. Even later on, you can ask him, but it doesn't matter. If it wasn't said at the time, then it's with. Dvarim Shabalev. Dvarim Shabalev Einam Dvarim. It would be what was assumed at the time. Rabbanan Lesley. Now let's continue the discussion. According to the Rabbanan, on the other hand, who say Mocher B'ayin Ra Mocher, he would say that when you sold the land, when you sold the trees rather, to somebody else, and you kept the land for yourself, no, you're not necessarily selling him land along with the trees. Now again, we had the whole discussion yesterday. We had the Rashbam versus Tosfos versus the various other opinions, how this fits with the general concept that we say that when you sell somebody three trees, automatically land goes with them. Is it that we're talking about maybe that Mishnah is only according to Rabbi Akiva, or maybe only according to the Chachamim, or maybe there's a distinction over here between whether you're explicitly saying you're including land or not. There was a difference, we said yesterday, whether maybe you're selling all your trees or only some of them. Anyway, so Rabbanan Lesley and Vafilu L'Rapapa Dama Yeshley. So therefore, even in the case that we had yesterday, in a case where the Papa would say, we sold the trees to one person, land to another one, we said the one who bought the trees is automatically entitled to some land with it. Why doesn't that work over here? Because he would say, he would say that only applies when you're selling to two different people. Because the one who owns the trees can argue, just as he sold to you, he sold you the karka in the sense that he's selling the karka completely. You own it forever, it and its payers and everything. So also, he would have had to sell to me also in the sense that he would have wanted to make, the same way as you are buying the karka in the way that you're going to have it forever, so also he would have sold me the trees in the way that I'm going to have them forever. Now the difference is, karka lasts forever, trees don't. Obviously it means he had to have sold me the trees in such a way that there's some karka along with them, at least the karka on which the trees themselves stand, such that if the trees ever die, I'm entitled to plant new ones. Otherwise, it wouldn't be Ayin Yafa.
You sell the land, but Ayin Yafa, you have to sell the trees, but Ayin Ra, you cannot sell both to Ayin Yafa.
Here we're using Ayin Yafa in a slightly different sense. We're saying like this. Your purchase of the land and my purchase of the trees have to be as much as possible parallel to each other.
Now, by definition.
Listen. You buying the land is a permanent thing. You are going to have this land at Sof Kol HaDeiros. Well, by the same logic, then, I have to have the trees at Sof Kol HaDeiros. The problem with that is trees don't last at Sof Kol HaDeiros. Obviously, he must have sold me the trees in such a way that it also goes together with their footprint on the land, such that I will be entitled, when these trees die, to plant new ones. Otherwise, he wouldn't have sold me behind Yafa.
So he didn't sell the land behind Yafa.
But no, he sold the land in such a way that it'll be permanent, and he's selling the trees also. In fact, the Rashbam uses the expression, Eidan Mchoyte Veloylo, a person doesn't do an Avera where it doesn't benefit him. He's not going to sell to one behind Yafa and to the other behind Yafa.
How can you sell both behind Yafa?
Because you're selling one behind Yafa, as in you will have all the land outside of the area of these trees permanently. That's as much as possible behind Yafa without infringing on the rights of the person who owns the trees.
What's Yafa about that?
What's Yafa about it is you have that land forever.
But that's
what it means.
What would it mean that if he sold the land to Ayin Ra?
It would mean, for example, that he's reserving himself an easement on it or something.
Right.
But if he himself is keeping the land and only selling the trees, then we would say, Mocher B'ayin Ra Mocher, he's not necessarily, there's no reason to say that he's necessarily selling B'ayin Yafa. He may well only be selling the trees B'ayin Ra, in the sense that the trees are there for now, fine, I'm not going to object to that, but if they ever die, you're not going to have the right to plant new ones.
That's Ayin Ra.
Therefore, even Rav Papa would say that in that case, you're not, according to the Rabbanon, you're not entitled to any land to go along with the trees.
After they die.
Right. Ayin Yafa would mean that you'll have the right afterwards. Yeah.
So if he sold the land,
no, if he sold the trees and kept the land, then Rav Papa would say, according to the Rabbanon, the one who bought the trees is not getting any land along with them. Which also means, therefore, if the trees themselves ever die, he's not entitled to plant new ones. when you're selling to two different people, you can't very well say you're selling to one Bayin Yafa and the other Bayin Ra. That's not sensible to assume that. Therefore, we assume that each one you sold in the maximum possible way that's Ayin Yafa for both of them, without infringing on each other's rights.
So when you sell to two people, but Ayin...
Then Ayin Yafa consists of the person who bought the land has it forever, and the person who bought the trees also has them forever, in the sense that he can replant new ones when the old ones die. As opposed to Bayin Ra would mean that he can't. So when you yourself are keeping the land, sure, Mocha Bayin Ra Mocha, that's what the Chachamim holds. But when you're when you're keeping the land for yourself. Yes. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Clear on the definition.
Yeah. Okay, now a new discussion. We said before that we learned before that we had yesterday a case where you had 30 trees in a property. You had 30 trees in a property. You ate the produce from 10 of them each year, where they were scattered around, and the other ones didn't produce fruit, et cetera, with all the definitions that we went through over there. Then you made a chazaka on the whole thing. However, now a detail on that. Amri Nahardai, Ochlan Ritzofen Aim Le Chazaka. However, if the 30 trees were planted too closely together, for example, instead of being planted 15 per base saw, which is the normal amount, instead of being planted 10 per base saw, sorry, they're planted, let's say, 15 per base saw, which is much more crowded, Aim Le Chazaka, then you do not have a Chazaka. Even if you did for the full 3 years. Because again, the general rule of chazaka, it has to be kedemachzaki inchi, the way that people normally use their property. Here you didn't. Now why is that? The Rashbam gives two explanations. One is because you're not gonna keep the trees that way. You're not gonna keep them planted 15 per base stock. They're too crowded. Inevitably, not necessarily they'll kill each other, but you yourself are going to soon uproot them. There's just a few of them, but whatever. You're not gonna keep all of them. Okay. Then the Rashbam gives a different explanation. We said before, we learned before, that you start out with 10 natiyas per base saw, 10 young trees. Eventually, those trees mature. Then 10 per base saw is way too crowded. We learned in the previous perek that each one takes a radius of 16 amos around it for its roots.
So initially, there can be more than...
So initially, there can be 10. Now, 10 is still the maximum, even for natiyas, even for a nursery. But once they're mature trees, you're going to reduce them down to 3.
Per base saw.
So therefore...
That's the
Rashbam's second explanation. So therefore, you don't have a chazaka if you made the chazaka using the young trees, where eventually 7 out of these 10 are going to be uprooted from there and replanted someplace else. That can't constitute a chazaka,
right?
Because they're not going to end up staying there like that forever. They're going to eventually be. You're going to only leave 3 of them. Maski for Rava. However, Rava asks on that. Elamayata, by that logic, if you're going to say that when it's too crowded together, it's not a chazaka, then how are you going to make a chazaka on a field where you grow aspasta, alfalfa or whatever it is for animal food, which we talked about before? It's planted, you plant it, you let it grow for a month, and then
you can grow closer.
Okay, so that's the point. In other words, again, it goes according to the two explanations of the Rashbam over here. According to the one explanation, that the problem is the trees are too close together, they're more than 10 to a base saw, and therefore you're never going to leave them that way permanently. Well, then aspasta also, you only grow it for a short amount of time, you only grow it for a month, and then you uproot it. You see that aspasta is grown very closely together, and yet it's not a problem, you can make a chazaka on it. Now, if we go with that first explanation that Ashbam says, it's not really such a kasha. Because the difference is, yeah, aspasta doesn't weaken the ground that much. You do plant it very closely together. Trees, you don't plant together more than 10 to a base. Yeah. So according to that explanation that Ashbam says, it's not really, there's not really a major question that Rava has against the Nahardai. It's just milsa d'alma. He objects to the basic din, and therefore he uses that as an angle to attack them, but not really, it's not really such a valid kasha. Then Rashbam's second explanation is this business about that you're uprooted and replanted someplace else is the difference is in that case, asbasta is the same kind of thing. You plant it very closely together, but then afterwards you thin it out. You spread it out. You spread it out and take that asbasta that you originally planted together in one crowded area and spread it out over a larger area. Just as you do with the trees, where you start out 10 per base saw, and eventually you scatter them out, so that's only 3 per base saw, and the other 7 are replanted elsewhere in the field. So then in that case, it is a real question. Then it is a real question. Then in that case, asbasta is exactly like young trees, which eventually mature in that regard. If the idea is that you're saying that you can't make a chazaka using the young trees because eventually 7 out of those 10 trees are going to be planted elsewhere in the field, well, then asbasta is the same kind of thing. You plant it for at first very crowded together, and later on you take some of the asbasta plants and replant them elsewhere in that area. And therefore, it shouldn't be a chazaka. And yet we know you can make a chazaka by growing asbasta. Ella Amar Rava, no. Machrin Surfin ain't like Kafa. No, Rava says, rather, if you want to say that there's a din that applies to Surfin, that applies to trees crowded together, that does not apply otherwise, it would be a different din. It would be the din that we were talking about before, this question of when you sell trees, does Kafka automatically go along with it? If you sell trees which are very crowded together, more than 10 to a base sa, then you don't automatically get karka with it. When you sell them and there's 10 young trees or 3 mature trees per base saw, then you're entitled to land along with them because the trees need an area for their roots to grow and then nutrients, and you need space to be able to harvest the trees and whatever. But if the trees are that crowded together, you're anyway going to end up removing some of them. You're anyway going to end up uprooting or cutting down or whatever some of them. Therefore, you can't say that you got karka along with the trees. So that's it. In other words, nothing to do with the question of establishing 3 years chazaka, but rather the previous issue that we were dealing with in the previous sugya about getting, when you buy trees, automatically getting land with it, that will make a difference how closely the trees are planted together or not. And that goes back to what we said at the beginning of the sugya yesterday, that we said if you had exactly 10 trees planted per base saw, then you can establish a chazaka in that way by eating some of them 1 year and some the next year and some the third year, but not if they're closer together because, like we're saying over here, then eventually you're going to uproot some of them.
Okay. So it's really our present discussion.
Yeah.
The closeness.
The closeness affects whether you get land along with the trees. Whether you get land along with the trees. Whether when you bought the trees, whether automatically you get land along with it. Amar Rav Zeira Katanoi. So Rav Zeira says, actually, this machlokus, not about asbasta. This question of whether if the trees are planted too closely together, whether it's possible to make a chazaka on it or to get land together with them, that would actually depend on a machlokus tanoi. We learn in Masechta Kelayim, Kerem Shum Natua Al Pachas Me'aba Amas. If you have a vineyard where the vines are planted at distances of less than 4 amas from one row to the next. Usually you have to be at least 4 amas between the rows, because that way you can go between the rows and plow and harvest and whatever. So if you have them planted closer together than 4 amas, Reb Shimon Omer Ein Kerem. Reb Shimon says in that case it's not even considered a vineyard. In the sense that, therefore, now we've learned before that if you have an actual vineyard, what's considered in halacha a vineyard, then if you want to plant grain or vegetables or whatever near it, you have to be at least 4 amas away.
When you say it has to be 4 amas, the line...
I mean that you have vine, 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 and then you have 4 amas and another row of vine, 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 vine. Yes. Yeah.
Everywhere I went, instead of 4 amas in one.
I don't know.
Even today in Israel, they don't have 4 amas.
I don't know. So maybe nowadays it's different. Anyway, but in those days, the usual thing was to plant the rows of vines 4 amas apart.
4 amas.
4 amas is about 6, 7 feet. About 6, 7 feet, yeah.
Never saw.
I don't know. So Reb Shimon Omer Ein Kerem. Reb Shimon says it's not considered a vineyard, and therefore if you want to plant grain or vegetables or whatever near it, you only need to be a few tefachim away. Tosfos says 3 tefachim. There's actually machlokas in the Mishnayos over there in Kelayim, the machlokas Reb Akiva and the Chachamim, whether 3 or 6 tefachim.
Where?
In the Sefer Kelayim, whether it's 3 or 6 tefachim. When you have individual vines, or like this, it would be considered, according to Reb Shimon, individual vines, you only need to be 3 or 6 tefachim away.
The stumps.
The actual vines themselves. You can't have the grain or the vegetables growing under the vines, that's for sure. So if the vines are stretching out, then you need to move the other crops further away. But never mind that. We're talking about if the let's say the vines grow straight up or whatever, all you need is you move three tefachim away or six tefachim away, as the case may be, according to the Rebbe Akiva versus the Chachamim, and then you can plant your other stuff over there. As opposed to if it was a vineyard, you'd need four amos away. Whereas the Chachamim say it is considered a vineyard. We consider, we're talking about, in other words, that we have at least three rows of vines. So you have one row, another row, let's say three amos away, another row three amos away from that. So Rav Shimon is saying the whole thing is not considered a vineyard because it's planted too close together. You're never going to keep it that way. It's not Abraham. Whereas the Chachamim say that we ignore the vines in the middle. We consider as though you just have the inner row and the outer row, and they're six amos apart, which fine, six amos is a reasonable distance.
Between other crops, you mean?
No, between the vines themselves. And therefore, we consider this whole area to be one vineyard. You have, again, one row of vines here, one here, one here. From one row to the next is less than four amos.
Right.
Rav Shimon is saying that's not considered a vineyard. A vineyard, by definition, right, has to have at least four amos between one row and the next. Okay. And if not, it's not a vineyard, and you do not have to have your other crops four amos away from it. The Chachamim are saying, as long as you have three rows of vines or more, then you ignore the ones in the middle. So you consider, you have one row here, you ignore this row over here, you have the next row over here. Good, you have two rows that are six amos apart. That's enough. That's fine. A vineyard can be planted with the rows six amos apart, and therefore it's considered a vineyard. It has the shape of a vineyard, and therefore
if I
ignore the ones in there.
Yeah,
therefore that applies to the same thing over here. When you have trees that are planted together more closely than 10 to a base saw, according to the Chachamim, that would still work. We ignore the extra trees and we focus on the 10 trees. Whereas Reb Shimon would say the same thing.
Both apply their own deal to.
We would say that the same thing that applies there applies here. Yeah. The truth of the matter is actually the Rif actually says it's not necessarily the same thing. He paskins in the case of chazaka or karka, as the case may be or whatever. He paskins like Rava that as long as they're too closely together, you don't get karka.
How much too closely?
More than 10 per besa. On the other hand, in the case of Kalaim, he paskins like the Chachamim that you ignore the middle row. One thing is, some of the Mepharshim explain the Rif may hold, but the Chachamim hold. In that specific case of Kalayim, we need to be Machmir, but not necessarily would that apply to other cases.
And the halacha is?
That's the halacha is those two things respectively. The halacha is like the Chachamim in the case of Kalayim, and the halacha is like Rava over here in the case of Vin. Another din. I'm reading the Haudori.
If somebody sells a tree to somebody else,
that other person has bought the karka underneath the tree from the depths, from the bottom of the tree, from the bottom of the tree all the way down, as far down as you go. Meaning, in other words, the Rashbam says, all this time before we were talking about the question, do you own any land outside the area of the tree? Now we're talking about the actual footprint of the tree. Now we're talking about the footprint of the tree itself. What is that? Under the tree itself.
Between the trunk and the branches.
Under the trunk, which means the Rashbam says it has two nafkaminas by saying that. Number one would be that if the tree dies, you'd be able to plant another one. Number two would mean that the other guy, the owner of the field, is not allowed to dig under that tree, no matter how deep he would want to go under the tree. He could even argue, I'm digging hundreds of amas deep. It can't possibly affect the tree. Doesn't matter. I own that land anyway. Tosfos argued as far as the actual size of the tree, as deep as you could possibly go. Tosfos disagrees with that and says it's not really the question of replanting the tree or not. That depends on the previous sugya. It would just be the issue of that the other guy can't dig under that area where the tree is.
Why is it not replanting the tree?
Because again, we learn later on in the Masechta, and we learned in the previous discussion, that if you buy two trees, you don't necessarily get character with them. And we discussed all the pros and cons of are you entitled to replant the trees or not. Maskifal Rava, however, Rava still again goes and argues with the Nahadoi. He asks on them, why should we say that you own that karka under the tree? You don't own karka. I, what about the fact that you have the tree there? The lemele, why can't the owner of the field argue back to him? Kukub the rishka zivinilach. Fine. Let's suppose we made the arrangement that I sold you garden saffron. Usually what you do is now you sell that to somebody. You don't necessarily sell him kauka with it, but you sell him the actual saffron plant that
it's not really a tree.
It doesn't matter. The point is, it's still a plant in the ground. It doesn't take up a lot. Listen, it doesn't really take up space. It doesn't really take much space. When you buy it, you're entitled to leave it to grow there until it matures. And in fact, Tosfos points out that sometimes it takes 3 years to fully mature, so it can even be shnei chazaka. But at the end, the person who owns the karka has to uproot it and take it, and that's that. He owns nothing in the karka. You don't say that he's entitled to replant new karka after that. So by the same logic, he could argue, I sold you a tree, fine. That's no different than if I sold you a kurka modishka, if I sold you garden saffron, zvinilach, that I sold you, a kurka modishka vazil. Fine. Just like when the saffron plant is mature, you uproot it, and that's it. You go. You have nothing else over here. Same thing it should be with your tree. As long as your tree is alive, fine. You're allowed to have it over here. As soon as it dies, you have
too bad.
You have to remove the tree. You're not entitled to replant it, and I should also have the ability to dig underneath it while it's growing, as long as I'm not harming it, because my land.
You want to build a tunnel underneath?
Yeah. Ella, Amar Rava b'bom machmas taina. So no, Rava says the only case where what the Nahadoya is saying would work, this concept that you're saying that you own the land under the tree, would be b'bom machmas taina. If the owner of the tree is coming with a taina, namely, if he argues
like this, you sold me
not only the tree, you actually sold me the land underneath the tree, the footprint of the tree, in the sense that therefore I'm entitled to plant another one. Now, this being karka, I had a shtar, fine, but 3 years have already passed, I lost my shtar, and therefore he's arguing for a chazaka on land, on that little piece of land, which is the footprint of the tree, just like any other chazaka on land. So fine, then that works. Then it's not like kurka madrishka anymore. Kurka madrishka is the understanding is that you buy only you're buying only the plant, or you're only the right to have your plant there, not to replant a new one. Here you're not. Here you're arguing that you bought the tree as well as the land underneath the tree, in the sense therefore that you can plant another one.
I mean, are you saying they stipulated it?
Yes, he's arguing that we stipulated that at the time. You sold me not only the tree but the actual land on which this tree stands.
So
3 years have passed. I lost my shtar. Well, then in that case, then how dare you have a point that therefore now because you own that land, therefore then the other guy,
how can you not think this way?
Fine. In other words, that's the only case. We're not saying it's a chiddush. We're saying that's the only. The Nahadoi would say it's more general. The Nahadoi argue this is a general concept. Rava would say it only applies in a specific case where you're arguing, where you're claiming that it was stipulated, where you're claiming shnei chazaka.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And he would be believed.
Yeah. For the same reason as a person is believed with any chazaka, as long as he has a taina.
Own the karka all the way down. The kuli alma. If you buy 3 trees, you own the karka all the way down.
Yeah. And then not only that, you own some area outside the trees, etc. Yeah.
That's for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Omele Rav Ravashi. So now, Makshisha, the son of Rav Chista, asks Ravashi on this. If you're telling me then that when you buy one tree, there's a possibility that after Shnei Chazaka, if you're saying that you buy one tree and after Shnei Chazaka, you will have the ability to claim, and you'll be believed on this claim, that you bought the karka together with this tree, well then, if somebody actually does buy kurka madrishka, if somebody does actually buy this garden saffron, where he's not supposed to be entitled to land, my havalei lemevet, then what should the other guy do to avoid that there's going to be a chazaka over here? We had a similar discussion. Rav Ashi himself asked his Rebbe, Rav Hana, a similar thing. This is after Rav Ashi learned the answer, then now he's asked the same thing in the next generation from his talmidim, that in that case, then you're going to argue that you're going to allow him after 3 years to claim that with the kurkum and the rishka automatically comes land and therefore automatically comes the ability to plant a new one. How do you avoid that? And again, they have the same impression as Rav Ashi did in the Gemara the other day. that the only valid machaz, which we're going to learn tomorrow, the only valid machaz to say this guy is a gazlan and he's in my land illegally. Here you don't have the ability to do that because the guy is there illegally. He has his kurkuma derishka growing there illegally. What kind of valid machaz would there be? And again, and Rav Ashi answers them the same thing, that he himself was answered, Ibar le machoye. Yes, as a matter of fact, he needs to make a macha, not a macha in the usual kind to say he's a gazlan, he's here illegally, but the kind of macha to say Beis Din should be put on notice, and this guy should be put on notice, that all I sold this guy is Kurka Madurishka, not the actual land itself, and therefore once his Kurka Madurishka is finished growing and he uproots it, that's it. He has no more rights over here. And he says, the Ila Temahochi, and Rav Ashi tells them, again, the same logic that Rav Kahana had told him in the previous Gemara, you have to understand it that way, because if you're not going to understand it that way, then you have to consider another case. Hai Mashkanta Desura, we have the case of the Mashkanta Desura, where we said one person borrowed money from another, mortgaged him his property, his field or whatever, with the understanding that the deal is that the other guy will be entitled to collect the crops from it over the years, and the loan will be paid off using those crops. And we said that works to avoid problems of ribis. And then the field is returned, right? Dekasa b'hachi, we write in the document as follows, the mission of Shnaya Ilin, when these years of the Mashkanta are over, Kipuk Ara Dabla Kesef, this land will go out from the Malva back to the Loiva without any further payment, so that way there's no problem of Ribis. So now Rav Ashi says to Makshisha, so fine, let's say, and now if the holder of the Mashkanta, if the Malva, were to hide this Shta Mashkanta, and say that I bought it, would you think to say that he could possibly be believed? Of course not. Would the Rabbanan make a takana of a Mashkanta Desura to avoid problems of Ribis, but structure it in such a way that the Loiva could end up losing out altogether? Where the Malva is going to have the ability to falsely claim that it was bought, can't be. Ella, you buy a little machoye. Obviously, you yourself have to admit that in that case, the Loiva is responsible to make a macha. Again, not a macha, this guy's a gazlan, but a macha. Be aware that this is a mashkanta, not a real sale, and make sure to renew that within every 3 years. Hachinami, buy a little machoye, same thing over here. If you sell somebody kurkuma derishka every 3 years, within every 3 years, you'd have to go to Beis Din and inform them that this is a mashkanta or this is kurkuma derishka, as the case may be. Yes, not a sale. Okay.
So the same thing over here.
Yeah, the same argument that Rav Ashi himself had in the previous Gemara to his Rebbe Rav Kahana. Now Mark Shisha has the same argument to him, and he answers in the same way. There is, by the way, in that Gemara as well as in this one, the Shita Mukabetis brings a couple of other Mephoshim who have a bit of a different girsa. That Rav Ashi himself over there and Mark Shisha over here asks based on the Mashkanta. And Rav Kahana answers Rav Ashi, and Rav Ashi answers Makshisha with the answer that Iboy lo machoye, that in the case of Mashkanta, you're obligated to be Mocha, and the same thing over here, you're obligated to be Mocha. Same similar idea, but a slightly different gear.
They're both Mashkantas.
Yes. Well, no, one is a Mashkanta, one is you're selling him only the right to grow your Kurka Madurishka here for a few years, and then, that's it. Mishnah says, Sholosh Arotas L'Chazaka. There are three lands, meaning three areas of Eretz Yisrael regarding the Dinim of Chazaka. Yehuda, Ve'ever HaYarden, VeHagolil. The relevance of saying that there are three Arotas is like this.
Hoya Yehuda, VeHafzik, VeGolil. If the owner of the property is in Yehuda,
and the Machzik is located in the Galil, so the land is in the Galil, and he's Machzik over there, or Begolil, the Hefzik people. The Galil is the north of Eretz Yisrael.
Where's the border between Yehuda and Galil?
So from the Yerushalmi, it kind of sounds like the Galil begins where Eretz Yehuda ends. Like Eretz Yehuda is the area like up until a little bit north of Yerushalayim, and the Galil begins from there. Many of the Mefarshim understand it somewhat differently, that the Galil is pretty much what we think of as the Galil. Yehuda is what we think of as Yehuda. And in between, there's the area where the Kusim lived. Therefore, as the Gemara is going to tell us, there were Shayoras and Tsuyas. It wasn't very common for people to travel from one to the other because it was through hostile territory
between Yehuda and Galil.
So, if the owner is in Yehuda and the Chazakah took place in the Galil, the Galil, the Hefzik, the Yehuda, ain't a Chazakah, then it's not a valid Chazakah. Because, as the Gemara is going to tell us, kishaf cheirum dami, there aren't shayoris mitsuyas, so therefore the macha, there's two different issues, really. Number one, the owner of the karka may well do a macha where he is, but it's not considered a valid macha because news of it is not going to reach the machzik, so therefore he's going to have to hold on to his shtar. The other angle of it is that. The owner of the karka may not even be required to do a macha in that case because he knows that news of it is not going to reach the machzik. Unless they're together in the same country, because there at that point you're supposed to be doing a macha, and if you don't do a macha, that's your problem.
So it's not a chazaka if I'm in America and you're in Israel.
It really depends. We're going to see in the Gemara. There's two different issues that we're going to deal with in the Gemara. Number one is a macha valid if it's not in the presence of the machzik? And number two is, even if we say that it is, there have to be shayoras mitzuyas. Even if we say that it works when it's not the fun of, there do have to be shayoras mitzuyas. There do have to be commonly people traveling back and forth. So fine, that second thing there is between Yeah, fine. But
is it traveling or communication?
No, the point is that enough people travel from one place to another that news will reach. But you also have the issue, which we're going to discuss in Gemara. Even if you have that, does it also have to be befun of? Does it have to be befun of anyway? Does it have to be in the presence of the machzik? That's a different issue we're going to have to deal with.
People moving back and forth now.
I guess that's true, yeah. The Rashbam, by the way, quotes from the Yerushalmi that says that even if you have, let's say, so you have the property is on one side of the Yarden and the owner is on the other side of the Yarden, but since people don't commonly cross over from one to the other, therefore it can't be considered a chazaka. They need to be on the same side of the river. They need to be where people commonly travel from one to the other.
At that time, they
didn't commonly cross the Yarden. I don't know why not.
Sure, today they do.
Yeah, well. then it was also, but still, I guess
like,
people didn't miss it. 50 amas wide, the Gemara mentions in a couple of places. But
50 amas wide. It's gotten a lot smaller.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Much smaller.
Okay. All right.
You see the other side.
Okay, let's continue. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Loi Amar Shalish Shanim. Rabbi Huda is coming to argue on this. He's saying, you're telling me, Tanakama, that if one is in the Galil and the other is in Yehuda, that it won't be a chazaka? No. Loi amru shalish shanim. No, the whole reason why b'chlal they said 3 years is not for the reasons that we said before, because you only hold on to your shtar for the 3 years or whatever, but a different reason. Ela kadeshi he b'aspamya, so that even if the owner is in Aspamya, which is Spain, which is, it could take a year to travel between there and Eretz Yisrael, so he can be there. The yachzik shana, the machzik can be doing a chazaka on the land for 1 year. Yelchu v'yadiur shana, somebody will end up traveling from Eretz Yisrael to Aspamya and inform him, and it'll take them a year to get there. V'yavi l'shana acheres, and the owner will then immediately start coming back. It will take him a year to get back, and therefore by the end of the 3 years he'll be able to be there. So therefore, in other words, Rabbi Huda is saying that it doesn't matter whether they're in the same country, different countries or not. Even if the guy is in another country, it can be a valid chazaka and it can be a valid macha.
Right. Of course, what he's going to say is, you ruined my vacation.
Well. So we're going to see in the Gemara, is Rabbi Yehuda arguing on two factors or just one? Is it that the Tanakhama is saying that you don't need chazaka b'funav, but at least you need to be in the same country, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying it needs to be b'funav, so therefore you actually need to show up in town over there, or that's one issue. And number two, is Rabbi Yehuda also arguing on the point that the Tanakhama is saying that if you're in two different countries and ain't Shayaros Mitzuyas, it's not a chazaka, and maybe Rabbi Yehuda is arguing that it is. So that's what we're going to work through in the Gemara,
one issue is
Shayaros and the other is Befana.
Shayaros
means caravan, people commonly traveling back and forth. Tosfos adds, by the way, that
you say Shayaros and not Befana.
Well, that's what we're going to have to figure out. It's possible that maybe you can have a macha can be shaloi b'fanav, as long as Shayaris Metzuyas. Or it can be that it has to be Bufanav anyway. So we'll say we'll work that out in the Gemara. Tosfos, by the way, points out, you know, it's not like a Samia is the furthest place possible. That's,
a year away from Eretz Yisrael.
What if the guy's someplace where he's a year and a half away from Eretz Yisrael? The answer is Tosfos says, okay, but usually people don't go more than that. So okay, Lloyd Flug. According to Rabbi Yehuda, Lloyd Flug, the Chachamim, once they make a takana, 3 years, on the assumption that usually the furthest the person is going to go is Spain, then that's it. They left it that way, even if it happens that the person is further away.
Amazing, someone would travel 1 whole year. Spain to Israel. It's just, I mean, now it takes a day.
Yeah, well, you have to remember, you know, I mean, I don't know whether we're talking about overland travel over here or whether we're talking about sea travel, but even sea travel in those days was pretty slow. They couldn't really go in the open. They couldn't really go in the open ocean. You know, they kind of had to hug the coastlines for safety's sake. You know,
they didn't have seaworthy boats. So much.
Okay, so the Gemara starts up. My Kasava Tanakama. Fine. When the Tanakama of this Mishnah, when he's saying that it matters whether one is in Yehuda and the other in the Galil or whatever, my Kasava Tanakama, what exactly does he hold? E Kasava Macha Shalai Gafanav Havi Macha, if he holds that a valid Macha can be done even not in the presence of the Machzik, Afilu Yehuda V'Galil Nami. So it shouldn't matter whether one's in Yehuda and the other is in the Galil or not. The Gemara doesn't know yet, this that we're going to point out in a minute, that caravans don't commonly go from one to the other. The assumption is even if one is in the Yehuda and the other one is in the Galil, he's going to find out about it. He'll make a macha at his local base city in the Galil, and that should be good enough. If we say macha shalei b'fanav is a valid macha. Ikasava macha shalei b'fanav lehavi macha. And if you're going to say that a macha not in his presence is not a valid macha, afilu Yehuda v'Yehuda nami loy, then it shouldn't even work, even if they're both in Yehuda, as long as they're in different cities. Why is the Mishnah telling us that if, as long as they're in the same country, in the same province, then it works? No, the Tanakama Taka does hold that a Macha Shalai B'Fanav is a valid Macha, so therefore they do need to, so as long as they're in the same province, as long as they're in the same country, then they're good. However, our Mishnah is talking about a time when there's war going on between not necessarily war, but the point is when there's not Ein Shayaris Metzuyas, there's not caravans commonly going from one to the other. So therefore, again, the owner of the karka himself may not even necessarily have to make a macha because he knows that news of it is not going to reach the other guy anyhow. Even if he does make a macha, you can't say that the other guy doesn't have the ability to say, well, 3 years passed, I didn't hear of any macha, therefore I didn't have to be careful with my shtar, because he should know the other guy is in a place, a shopping bedroom where there's no traveling back and forth, therefore he should know, he has to hold on to his shtar.
Wait a minute, if he goes to the local basin and he makes a macha in writing, are we still going to consider that it's not a chazaka after there's no chirum, after
there can't be 3 years between one macha and the next. What we're saying is like this. If the original chazaka took place during the shach chirum, then yes, then that doesn't count for anything because news is not going to go from one place to another. The macha is not going to go from one place to another. Therefore you can't have a chazaka. You can't say I didn't hear there was a macha. Therefore my chazaka is a chazaka. No, you should know there's a shach chayrum and therefore know to hold on to your shtar. If eventually the shach chayrum goes away, okay, well then the 3 year clock starts then. Fine. If there's no macha during those 3 years, fine.
But it doesn't start from the moment of the acquisition. It starts.
Okay. In that case, then you have to ask then why is the Mishnah specifically mentioning Yehuda and Galil?
Yeah.
Now, so that Ashban explained, the point of the question is the Mishnah didn't have to mention Yehuda and Galil specifically. The Mishnah should have just said any two countries between which there is a Shas Chayim, then it doesn't work from one to the other. Why specifically single out Yehuda and Galil? Then the Rashbam gives another explanation, which he says, well, we're going to give the answer in a second, but first the Rashbam says some people understand the question to be, why did the Mishnah say Yehuda and Galil, rather than saying Yehuda and Yehuda, where if there's a Shach Cherem? The Rashbam says, I don't like that explanation, because first of all, the Gemara just asks that, I feel Yehuda, Yehuda, Nami, like. And second of all, usually there's not a shas cheirum within one medina itself, between one medina and the next, there can be a shas cheirum. It's not usual to assume that there would be one within the same country itself.
It doesn't happen that usually that we should ask
why the Mishnah doesn't say Yehuda v'Yehuda. We can understand. The Mishnah is telling us that you have to be talking about places where there's a shas cheirum. But why specifically single out Yehuda and Galil if the same thing could apply between any two countries? The answer is Hakamash Malon, the Gam Yehuda v'Galil k'shas cheirum double. The chiddush of the Mishnah is that, in general, Yehuda and Galil, even if it's actually peacetime, are considered shas cheirum because people don't commonly travel from one to the other. But that's just because going through Kuzi territory, it was a dangerous part of Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, people don't commonly enough travel from one to the other. So in other words, the point is, with other countries, the Mishnah can't generalize to say that other countries, it doesn't work, because other countries, it depends whether they're at war with each other or not. But Yehuda and Galil,
we're always
separated by the Kusim, and therefore, whether it's Shas Shalom or Shas Melchama, then it doesn't work. It doesn't work.
When did it start, this separation?
The Pashtus, when the Kusim moved in there, after Sancheirev brought them there towards the end of the first Beis Hamikdash.
When they returned?
Well, no, towards the end of the first Beis Hamikdash, when the ten Shvatim were taken into Galus.
Then
Sancheirev imported the Kusim, yeah. And even before that, you couldn't always travel from Yehuda to Galil anyway, because one was one kingdom and the other was the other, and many times the border was closed. But yeah.
How long did it take to destroy them or to remove them or whatever?
History doesn't record that. I mean, the Aseret HaShvatim, their kingdom was destroyed in three waves, if that's what you're asking. There were three waves of Galus in which the Aseret HaShvatim were taken away into Galus, each one 8 years apart. And then after the place was depopulated, then Sancheirev repopulated it with the Kusim.
Since we're talking about Aseret HaShvatim, can they originated from Yehuda?
Aseret HaShvatim, all the Shvatim except Yehuda and Binyamin.
Except Yehuda and Binyamin.
Levi is originally you had him in the Levim are scattered among all the Shvatim. The Pasuk in Divrei Yomim described that most of the Kohenim and Levim moved south to Eretz Yehuda because they didn't want Yerovam set up as Eglei HaZahav and announced anybody who wants can be a Kohen or a Levi. So the real Kohenim and Levim found no reason to stay in that kingdom anymore. Most of them moved south.
Jews that come from the Caucasus, they're considered descendants of the Aseret HaShvatim.
I have no idea. Tosfos points out, now there are other cases. For example, we learned in Gittin that if you're bringing a get from one place to another in Eretz Yisrael, then Edim Mitzuyin Lekaima, you'll still be able to find Edim, even between Yehuda and Galil, even though we're saying over here Ein Shayaros Mitzuyas. Tosfos says because when a woman has a get, she's going to go start looking around for Edikiyum. Here, is the machzik going to go looking for people to say to find out whether there was a machal or not? Obviously not. So therefore, yeah. Okay. So therefore, that's the thing. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, ein machzik in minichse bereach. Okay. So now, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav says you cannot make a chazaka in land that belongs to somebody who ran away. As we're going to see in the Gemara, he holds that machal shalei b'fanav is not a valid machal, not like we understood the chachamim of our Mishnah. But rather, like we're going to understand Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah. If someone escaped from the country, and you go and make a chazaka on his property, that's not a valid machal, because it's not a machal. It's a machal shalei b'fanav. Rabbi Yehuda is saying in the Mishnah that the person himself needs to show up from Aspanya, implying Rabbi Yehuda holds you need machal b'fanav. That's how we're going to see now in the Gemara. That's how Rav understands Rabbi Yehuda. We're going to see tomorrow that Rava understands Rabbi Yehuda differently. But for the time being, let's start with this. So machal shalei b'fanav. Rav says it has to be b'fanav, and therefore that's it. If the guy ran away, then yeah. Kiyam Rita Kameh to Shmuel. So Rabbi Yehuda says, when I told over this din of Rav to Shmuel, Rabbi Yehuda had originally been Rav's Talmud. Rav passed away, so then Rabbi Yehuda went and became Shmuel's Talmud. We find him in most of Shas, we find him as Shmuel's star Talmud. But at first he'd been a Talmud of Rav. Shmuel outlived Rav by 7 years.
By 7 years.
Yeah. So when I came and told this din to Shmuel, Omali says to me, why? Why does the machal have to be in the presence of the machzik? So the question is, So in that case, fine. What is the chiddush that Rav is telling us? Exactly that. That's exactly what Rav wants to inform us with his din about machzikin, about ein machzikin v'nichse bereya. Precisely that point, that you cannot make a chazaka if it's not. Shmuel argues, he says to Rabbi Huda, why would Rav be saying that? What's wrong with a machal shalei b'fanim? But the answer is, no, that's exactly why Rav said this din. Precisely to tell us that he holds machal shalei b'fanim is not a machal. Yeah. It has to be b'fanim.
It's so obvious. Why is Shmuel saying, what does he mean by that?
Because Shmuel is asking, why should it have to be? We're going to see in a minute. Okay, so the question is, don't we find that Rav himself said that a machal shalei b'fanim is a valid machal? The answer is, Rav, time of the Tanya Didan come afarish. Fine, but we could say that that last statement of Rav is only coming to explain what are the chachamim of our Mishnah hold. Rav himself doesn't have to agree with that. Rav himself can hold that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, and therefore, fine, in that case, he understands Rabbi Yehuda to be saying machal shalei b'fanim is not a valid machal.
And he just gave the opinion of
explained the chachamim are saying machal shalei b'fanim have your machal. Right. Therefore, as long as you're together in the same medina, then it's fine. And if you didn't do a machal, then that's your problem. Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, though, is saying that you need to actually come from Aspanya, which implies you need to actually make the machal b'fanav. Why? Because machal shalei b'fanav is not good. That's how Rav would understand the Mishnah.
Are we saying that the halacha is like chachamim, that you don't?
We're saying that Rav, thus far, we're saying that Rav would say the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. He's saying that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda of the Mishnah. Yeah. The Ikadami, however, then there's another version.
Then there's another version. How can you say that
Allah
is like Rabbi Yehuda against
Achamim? Sometimes it happens, but wait. It happens sometimes. The Ikadamri, another version of this discussion, went like this. According to the second version, Rabbi Yehuda reports in the name of Rav, you can make a chazaka on the Nechasim. No. Then it's not necessarily talking. Wait. Okay. And PM Yitzhak Kameh to Shmuel, and then according to this version, when Rabbi Huda says, when I told this over to Shmuel, Amalei Pshita, he says to me, obviously, the Chilim Chas B'fanav Hutzarech. Why? Why should we think you need a Machal B'fanav? And then again, the question becomes, Rav Mai Kamash Malan. In that case, what is Rav's Chiddush with that? He's trying to say, Machal Shalei B'fanav Havi Machal, that he wants to inform us that even if the Machal is not in his presence, then it's a valid Machal. But Rav already said that. We have a separate statement that Rav said explicitly, Machal Shalei B'fanav Havi Machal, which before we thought that contradicted what he said in the first version, and we said that one is according to the Chacham and one is according to the Yehuda. Here, in the second version, if we say that he holds Machal Shalei B'fanav Havi Machal, then that's exactly the same thing as he's saying in his explicit statement. Why bother? And in fact, the Kosei Yeshua asks, the Gemara can't answer that maybe that was meant to explain what the Chachamim hold, and he was saying according to Rabbi Yehuda, because in that case, why would he have to bother mentioning anything about a Bereach at all? Mela, in the previous thing, fine, we can understand. We have two different opinions, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. So
you
say
he expresses the opinion of the...
He's explaining the Chachamim, but he himself holds like Rabbi Yehuda. But in this second version, if we're saying he holds that Machzik and Menichse Bereach, which implies Machal Shalei B'fanav is a Machal, why even bother mentioning Bereach at all? Just say Machal Shalei B'fanav is a Machal, and that's that.
So therefore,
we have to ask, what is Rav's Chiddush with this business about Bereach? Ela hakamash malon. No, rather the chiddush of what Rav is saying is that filo micha b'fnei beis she'ein in yecholim loymaloi. The chiddush according to the second version is that even if he says the macha in front of two people who are not able to go and tell him have your macha, then it would be a macha. What do we mean? People who aren't able to? For example, the Rashbam says, let's say for example these people are lame. They're lame. They can't walk from one place to another to record it. Or they're going away to Medina Siyam or whatever. Nevertheless, it still works. Nevertheless, machzikin minichse bereach, in the sense, in other words, the bereach can make a macha. The bereach has the capability of making a macha wherever he is, even if the only people available to him in this other country are chigrim or what have you. And therefore, if he did not make such a macha, tough luck on him. And therefore, in other words, the machzik has the right to say, after 3 years, I didn't hear that there was a macha, therefore my chazaka is a chazaka. And how do we know this? The Amr of Anan, because in fact Rav Anan says the Didi Mifarshili Mineim Dimar Shmuel, because he said Rav Anan says that Mar Shmuel explicitly explained it to me, meaning in other words explaining what Rav had said. Shmuel himself disagrees with the whole concept, as you just said. He asked why Rav even needed to say this, but Shmuel explained what Rav meant that he means micha b'fnei shnei b'dei adam sheicholim loyma loy habi macha. So Shmuel explained like this. Shmuel's own opinion, according to the second version, Shmuel's own opinion is that it matters whether the Edim are able to go and report the Chazaka or not. If he tells it to people who are lame, for example, it wouldn't work. If he does the macha in front of two people who are able to go and report to the makris, then it's a chazaka. But then Shmuel would say that's not considered a macha, because then you can't assume that any news of it reached him.
I think that's the reverse of the previous.
But that's how Shmuel holds. So therefore, Shmuel would say it's not so simple to say machzik and menich sederaya, because it depends on whether he's able to make a macha in front of people who are going to be capable of bringing the news from one place to another. The Rav. Where's what would Rab answer to that? The fact that he disagrees with that, he would answer the famous expression that we had a few times already: chavra chavra islay, v'chavra v'chavra chavra islay. Your friend has a friend, the friend of your friend has a friend. Even if you only told it to people who are not able to walk or whatever, inevitably news of it will reach the other guy, as long as shayaras mitzuyas, as long as people are traveling from one place to another. So that's how Rab holds. Yeah. Omar Rabba. The bottom line halacha is, ein machzikin minichse bereach. On the one hand, you cannot make a valid chazaka on the nechasim of somebody who ran away, who fled, because on the face of it, because machal shalei b'fanav, like havi machal. But on the other hand, he continues, machal shalei b'fanav, havi machal. On the other hand, a machal not in the presence of the machzik is a machal. So the question is, how is Rava saying two contradictory statements? The answer is, like Kasha, kan bereach machmas mamon, kan bereach machmas merodin. We have to consider, what are the two possible reasons why the person ran away? Did he run away because of money problems? Where, let's say, for example, he owes somebody money or whatever. So he runs away until he can eventually raise the money. Well, then he has no problem being moicha, because he doesn't mind if the other guy knows where he is. First of all, the other guy is not likely to pursue him over there in order to collect the debt, especially because the Rashbam doesn't spell this out, but some of the other Mephoshim do. You have to consider it's going to cost money to get to that other place. With the other guy, why would the other guy want to throw good money after bad and go spend money to chase after him over there when, as it is, he's only doing it for money? So therefore, the one who ran away feels safe over there. Therefore, he's capable of making a macha over there. He's capable of going to the local Beis Din and making a macha and expecting that word of it will eventually reach the machzik. And therefore, no problem. And therefore, if no word of such a macha came within 3 years, again, as long as there are freely people traveling from one place to another, then it can be a valid chazak. As opposed to if the guy ran away, for example, because he killed somebody, well then he's afraid to be mocha because he doesn't want them to know where he is. The Goyal Adam might the Goyal Adam or the law or whatever might come after him.
The one who fled for money doesn't care
people know where he is, right? Whereas the one who fled because of Merodin does care. Therefore he'll be afraid to make a macha. Therefore that's when Rava is saying Ein machzikin minichse bereach. And Tosfos points out even Shmuel would agree with that. When it comes to a bereach machmas mamon, you are able to make a chazak on it, which is like the second lashon of Rab. And most of the Rishonim, in fact, Paskin, usually we have in a machlokas Rab and Shmuel, usually the halacha is like Shmuel and Dini Mamonis. Here, since the Gemara itself is following and Rava himself is following Rab's shita, then most of the Rishonim say that in this case the halacha is like Rab. So therefore, bereach machmas mamon, you can make a chazak. You don't need the machal b'fanav, but not only that, even like Rav said, even if, let's say, the only people you did the machal in front of are people who themselves are not capable of bringing the news from one place to another, it still works. You're going to have a chavre slay, etc. The news, chavre chavre slay, your friend has a friend. Chavre, your friend, chavre slay has a friend. Chavre de chavre, I'm the friend of your friend, chavre slay has a friend, and therefore the news will eventually spread. And that's the machkana.
I think that the new spread spreads for mammon quicker than anything else.
Maybe.